How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 50 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. You can leave a review if you're feeling like it as well. Find us on audioboom.com too. I'm on every day of the week now, and obviously off weekends, but shows Monday through Friday. That's what weekdays are, aren't they? Friday's episode is going to be that episode I talked about before. It's going to be the season preview podcast, going over-unders for every team. So that's going to be with Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Going to be a really fun podcast. Like I've said before, I don't know how long we're going to go. That's the beauty of podcasting. I don't have to fit into 22 minutes or 44 minutes or whatever television shows are. I don't even have to fit into a half-hour time slot and can go 27 or 29 or 28 or, like HBO shows. Or if you're Entourage, I guess like 22. But, yeah, I can go 20 minutes and I can go an hour. So we'll see how long we go. I imagine Josh and I will probably talk for a decent amount of time. There are 30 teams. We're going to start with Eastern Conference and go to West, or we're going to start with Western Conference and go to East. I haven't mapped it out yet, but we're going to go over-under for wins and all that stuff. And if we do go super long, I might just make it into two podcasts and put one on Friday and the next one to lead the week on Monday. So we'll see how it all goes. I think over-unders are really fun. It's a really fun way to preview teams. Everybody likes talking about that stuff. So I think that's going to be a really fun podcast. It's something I'm really excited for. Josh and I are planning on recording Thursday night as of now. So, that'll be good to go. At least one part of it, if not all of it, will be good to go Friday morning. But for now, let's talk about the Thunder. Quick podcast tonight because, honestly, I'm recording this late. I just got back from the Thunder blue and white scrimmage, and I'm a little under the weather. And I got to rest before the season starts. I can't be sick going into the season. Like, the podcast listeners need me. They need me. Or at least that's what I like to believe. That's how I wake up in the morning. I trick myself into thinking the podcast listeners really need me. That there's somebody out there other than my mother listening to this. Actually, thank God my mother does not listen to this. I tried to teach my mom how to download it, just so I could pad my numbers and get more downloads, of course, because one download makes all the difference in the world. And I tried to teach her how to download podcasts, and it just went horribly. Like, I couldn't show her because we don't live in the same city, and we were talking on the phone. So I couldn't show her on her phone because she was using her phone. And the way I was trying to teach her how to get into podcast centers and the difference between subscribing and downloading singular episodes was just completely lost. I mean, it was completely lost. It was an infuriating conversation. One that I'm sure we have all had with somebody of that technological competence at some point in our lives. It was an amazing thing. But let's talk a little about the blue and white scrimmage. So in case you're unaware of it, that was Tuesday night. It's an annual event. The Thunder hold it every year. It's basically an open practice that the Thunder have at a different place every year. And this year it was at John Marshall Mid High School, which is up by the lake in Oklahoma City. Really pretty gym. Nice school. J.R. Giddens went there, I learned today. Former Boston Celtic J.R. Giddens. Unbelievable leaper. They've got his jersey out there in the hallway next to a grizzly, like a giant stuffed grizzly bear. Like, I don't know if that grizzly bear is real, but that thing looks real. Like, that thing really looks real. Anyway, so it's they play a scrimmage, 10-minute quarters. A little bit longer in the second quarter this time because the scoreboard went down, so there was a delay for about 5 minutes. But other than that, 10-minute quarters. The white team? I'm trying to remember who was on what team. Yeah, so the white team seemed to be made up of at least of a lot of starters. It was Russell. I'll read off the rosters quickly, and you won't remember it, but just in case you remember one or two names, just remember white team is really mostly starters. Blue team was mostly bench guys. So white team was Russell Westbrook, Victor Oladipo, Andre Robertson, Domantas Sabonis, Steven Adams, Ilyasova, Kyle Singler, Cameron Payne, Mitch McGarry, Alex Caruso, Chris Wright. I don't know why I didn't give Ilyasova a first name. He's like, hey, maybe there's an Ichiro type of situation that's about to happen with Ilyasova. Maybe he's the share of the NBA. The blue team is Ronnie Price, Anthony Morrow, Josh Eustace, Joffrey Laverne, Enes Kanter, Nick Collison, Samaje Christian, Alex Abrines, and Caleb Tarzewski, the Zeus, the Arizona product, who dunked on Mitch McGarry during that game. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go over a quick five observations from the game. Like, the game really doesn't mean anything at all. But first, I wish I got this on video, but when the team came in, they got to the bus and there was almost, you know, there was like a fenced off area where the team walked in off the team bus, and there were just tons of students. Like, there were 2,000 in attendance. They said they rounded it to about 2,000, and it was mostly students, like teenage students, young teenagers who were mostly there. And they all just immediately flocked to the fence when it came in, and they're all leaning up against the fence. Like, you know, the Beatles are getting off the bus or something, and they're screaming, they're yelling, especially when Russell Westbrook gets off the bus, they're just freaking out. Anyway, so I'm trying to get video of this so I can tweet it out. And I'm standing next to this girl who, she couldn't have been older than 11. She might have been 10. She might have been 9. She was young. I mean, it was like a young third, fourth, fifth grader, something like that. And Josh Eustace walks by. And I hear the girl go, "Who's that? Damn, he's fine." I just thought that was the best moment of the night. Hearing like a 10-year-old say that with such verve was such a great moment for me. It made me so happy to hear that. And I was so disappointed that my phone was fixated on the players and didn't pick up this little girl saying this thing that you just don't expect to hear out of a little girl's mouth. It was a wonderful moment that really, it brought me so much joy. But let's talk a little bit about the actual game, because, you know, this will probably, what we learned from this may not prove to be the most important things in the world, but there are some observations that we can at least take away, because this is the first time that we've seen this version of the Thunder play a game in front of fans. Like, yeah, it's an inter-squad scrimmage, but it's the first time we've seen them play in front of fans. It's the first time we've seen this group play together at all, any of us, because I'm not privy to watch practice. When we go to practice, we go and we talk to them after practice. We're not really sitting there watching practice. Maybe we catch the very conclusion of it, but we never see a scrimmage or anything along those lines. That's all closed up. We're waiting in the media room, and then we talk to them after. So this is the first time we've really seen these guys all play together. First observation. Sabonis looked comfortable from three. That was an interesting development. So Sabonis went 1 for 3 from three. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to take three threes a game. Everything from this game, if you're going off statistics, the statistics are unnecessary. They show absolutely nothing, whether they're good or bad or anything in between. The stats show nothing. It could just mean that they're encouraging him to take threes in practice because they want him to develop a three, and that's how you develop it. You take him in practice, you take him in scrimmages, that's how you do that stuff. But Sabonis looked comfortable. He squared up in the first quarter. He had 10 points in the first quarter. In the first quarter, he squared up from three, and from NBA three, he squared up and hit one, not from the corner, from the left wing. And it was wide open, but he hit it. And he looked really comfortable doing it. He didn't look strained. He didn't look forced. He didn't hesitate. He went up in rhythm, and he shot it, and he made it. And he went 4 for 4 in the first quarter from the field. You know, there are scouts who think that Sabonis is going to be able to develop a three-point shot. Now, that doesn't mean that they think that Sabonis is going to be a three-point shooter this year. I don't think anybody really thinks that that's going to happen. But if he's someone who can maybe get there a little bit quicker, I mean, he's still just 20 years old. If he can get there a little bit quicker, if he can shoot threes, I just thought seeing him shoot threes and look natural while doing it, not looking forced, was really interesting. Because Sabonis made no threes as a freshman. at Gonzaga. He made 5 threes as a sophomore last year, and then he left for the NBA. So he made 5 threes in his two-year collegiate career, and that's from the college three. That's from a closer three-point line than the one that he played with the other day. Now, let's not read too much into the fact that Domantas Sabonis made a three. He's an NBA player. Like, NBA players can make threes. Steven Adams, though he doesn't do it often, can make threes. They're strong enough to shoot from that far away. Their legs are in good enough shape to shoot from that far away, and they're good enough at basketball that they can make threes. Pretty much all NBA players, whether they shoot them or not in actual NBA games, can make threes. So I want to be clear that that is the case, and that we shouldn't overreact to the fact that the dude made a three in a game once. But it did just kind of trigger my thoughts and thinking, I wonder what he looks like if he is a three-point shooter. Because that kind of changes everything with him. If he can actually stretch out to the three-point line, that'll change a lot with him. Now all of a sudden, like, yeah, he's left-hand dominant down low and he's not dunking over people or anything like that, but he's got really good footwork and he's fluid and he's super coordinated and he's got moves. And you got a guy who can play in the post, but now he can step out to three. Before, he kind of had to play in the post because while he's a good mid-range shooter, his bread and butter is around. That's where he's going to be most efficient probably, on the block. But you have Steven Adams there, and that's what messes up with spacing, right? So now you got to have him hang around mid-range, which is not as good for him as hanging around the post. You're not utilizing his best assets or his best aspects. If he can shoot threes, though, then even if he's not quite as good at it, the efficiency is just so much higher when you're shooting a three than it is when you're shooting a 19-footer. It's so much higher. You're getting one extra point. It's all. It's 50% more valuable. So that's something. If he can develop that three-point shot in the next few years and actually become reliable at that, then the Thunder have themselves a solid rotation, a really solid rotation player, I think. And I'm excited to see, and just as a basketball fan, I'm interested to see how his shot develops over the next few years. Second observation, Ronnie Price is like, that dude's a pest. He is an insect. He's not even an insect because people squash insects. He's an unsquashable insect. Not because he has a particularly hard exoskeleton, but because when you try to squash him, he scurries under the refrigerator every time. Man, he was so annoying to Russell Westbrook. I mean, he was going so hard in that game. It was funny, like, we were joking about it on Press Row. Like, Ronnie Price is playing like he's on a 10-day. Ronnie Price is a 33-year-old on a 2-year deal with both years fully guaranteed. And Ronnie Price was playing in a blue and white scrimmage on a Tuesday in September like he was on a 10-day contract. He was going so hard at Russell Westbrook. And he was making, like, look, he pickpocketed him once in one-on-one defense without any help on the right side of the court, which I thought was just impressive. That was just an awesome play. And there was another play where I thought, like, man, like, that's such a veteran play. So Russell Westbrook went around two Steven Adams pick and rolls, and he went right on two Steven Adams pick and rolls. And Steven dove to the rim. And Russ pocket pass with the right hand both times. Bounce pass. Pocket pass. And tried to bounce it to Adams both times. So the third time, Ronnie Price was guarding it. Price came around the screen. And instead of guarding Russ to go to the rim, he just jumped immediately into the passing lane. And Russ threw that exact same pass. And Price deflected it. And I was just like, man, what a veteran move. Recognizing that Russ isn't going to go to the rim and getting in that passing lane instead. He is just a total pest. It's got to be so annoying to go up against that guy every day in practice. He's really good on the ball, and he's good going around screens. You know, there's another play where he was guarding Victor Oladipo on the left side, and Oladipo just got a little bit frustrated. And he just totally blatantly pushed off, and it wasn't called because, you know, who the hell It's a high school gym. How often is that play called in a high school gym? But he blatantly pushed off, and he ended up putting up a fadeaway long two without Price in his face because he got pushed. But like, he was just draped all over these guys all night. That's got to be annoying to play against. So I don't know. I enjoy Ronnie. When you hear Ronnie Price is the ultimate practice player, it's like, yeah, that's why. That's why Ronnie Price is the ultimate practice player. That makes sense. Third, we got to talk about Cameron Payne a little. I feel bad for Cameron Payne. So Cameron Payne, this was his first time back. I mean, it was everyone's first time playing in front of fans since Summer League or since the end of the last season, if players didn't play Summer League, which is most of them. But it felt like a bigger deal for Cameron Payne because Cameron Payne had foot surgery to repair a Jones fracture in his right foot back in July. That was after Summer League. He played Summer League, underwent the foot surgery a couple of weeks later. Now he's back. He came back for training camp, no restrictions. He's been good. He's been healthy. He's been back into shape. He gained 10 pounds, he said, over the offseason. Muscle watch. I know Lang Whitaker loves that muscle watch. Everyone's gaining weight. It's all muscle. It's always 10 pounds of muscle. It's not 9 pounds of muscle and 1 pound of fat. It's 10 pounds of muscle. It's always 10 pounds of muscle. Because he's got 0% body fat. It's 10 pounds of muscle. That's how much he gained. But he came back, came in the second quarter, rolled over his ankle. Thunder said he tweaked his ankle was the terminology they used. Didn't come back into the game. We don't know the severity on his ankle right now. The Thunder don't practice on Wednesday, so there's a chance we might not even find that out until Thursday, or we might not even get another update on how his ankle is doing until Thursday. I just feel bad for Cameron Payne. I'm sure he was looking forward to playing in that game, to playing in front of people. I'm sure that was something he was excited to do coming off the foot injury. Whenever someone's hurt and they're coming back, it's always an exciting moment for them to come back and to have that derailed with an ankle injury, which is, I mean, for all we know, I mean, based on the way that it's been described, tweaked his right ankle, seems unrelated. You know, we don't know at this point, but you know, from the action that he had, it seems to be a different injury than the Jones fracture. That's disappointing, even if it's totally unserious and he's back at practice on Thursday. I just feel bad for him that happened in his game that was supposed to be kind of a game back for him that I'm sure he was excited for. It's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate for him. But we'll find out more about Payne this week. Thursday at the very latest, we'll find out some update, even if the update is that they don't have an update. And, you know, you can follow me on Twitter at FredCats, or you can check out normantranscript.com and find out updates on Payne and all of that there. Fourth observation, I thought Josh Eustace played really well. Now, this is one of those situations where it's like, what in the world does that even mean? It's a scrimmage. Playing well isn't something that's translatable. Like, maybe certain aspects, maybe there are specific traits, but like, playing well, it means nothing. Like, putting up good numbers, it means nothing. But his shot blocking was impressive. He had a few really nice blocks. He blocked a couple of three-pointers. He blocked a jump shot. According to the unofficial box score that the Thunder sent out, he blocked one shot, but that's not right. I tweeted out that box score Tuesday night, but that's not right. He blocked more than one shot, for sure. He blocked at least three. He might have blocked four shots. He was really active defensively. Now, offensively, he missed some shots. He was a little bit all over the place, and he got beat out on some rebounds. But I thought he did a really good job defending the perimeter, disrupting some shots, contesting shots, getting out in the perimeter to contest threes. I thought he was impressive in that aspect. You know, if he can be a rotation player, that's a really big deal for the Thunder. I don't know if he can. We haven't seen evidence that he can so far. He was in the D-League all last year. He played 5 regular season games. They were all at the end of the year after the D-League season had ended. Came up, he was decent. He had a decent game against Portland. But he's already 24. Like, if Josh Eustace were 19 or 20, people would think differently of him than him at 24. But that would be a big deal if he could come in and help, because the Thunder need any kind of help they can get on the wings. And if they can get that from Hustis, who they're looking at is, you know, someone who was drafted 2 years ago in the first round and is still yet to help the team. Well, I guess that's a little bit of an unfair statement, because they were putting him in the D-League for the whole year, no matter what, during his rookie year, because he signed a D-League contract out of that. So I guess the fairer statement would be to say who didn't do much during his rookie year. But if they can get something from Hustis at 24, that would be a really nice addition for a team that could use help on the wings. And if he can play above average defense like that, that will help their defense too, which I think stands to be a good defense and has guys who can defend on the perimeter right now in Oladipo and in Robertson and even in Kyle Singler. If you can add Hustis there as a guy who's a plus defender, that's a really nice addition. I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to happen, but that's just, it's something that would be such a great like surprise help for the Thunder if it were at all possible. Fifth observation, is Andre Robertson going to have a slightly bigger role this year? That's a question. Or is that just talk? Okay. So Robertson had 13.6 assists in the scrimmage. He played a good game. Like, again, he played well. He got out in transition. He finished some buckets around the rim. He made some really nice passes, actually. He was going coast to coast. He handled the ball a tad more. He ran a couple of pick and rolls, but, like, who cares? It's pickup. Like, who's just doing it, you know? Like, I don't think that's going to happen. Nothing based on his previous play has indicated that he's going to touch the ball more when the actual games come up. And Oladipo barely touched the ball on Thursday, too. That's something I'm sure the Thunder will work on doing this year. They're going to have to get the ball to their creators, the guys who are named Russell Westbrook and Victor Oladipo. Those guys are going to create. And compared to how often that he's going to be dribbling this season, it's going to look like he never even touched the ball on Tuesday night. A lot of the touches that Robertson got tonight are going to go to Oladipo come the real games. But Robertson said something that I thought was interesting after the game when we talked to him. So we talked to Robertson, we talked to Sabonis, and we talked to Russell Westbrook after the game. And Robertson said something that it kind of caught my eye after. Listen up.
Andre, you looked really comfortable with the ball in your hands. Do you feel like that's a big improvement you made in the offseason?
Definitely. That's what they're encouraging me to do, kind of, you know, when I get a rebound, just push the break. And kind of, you know, play at a more up-tempo pace instead of looking for Russ all the time to push it. You know, we want to play at a higher pace. You know, we just get off the board and everybody just take off running. Just look for the open man that's playing together. That's what we ultimately want to do. You know, we're all interchangeable parts, and, you know, that's what makes the team hard to stop.
So I don't know if that's just him saying stuff after the game, or if it's a sentiment that's going to go away, or if that's real, or if it's all those things like just tied into one. And I don't think Robertson like handling the ball a lot more is going to be the case in the long run. And I understand this is something that Robertson has actually talked about a lot, that they want to play fast. They want to get out in the run. They want to get live ball turnovers. They want to get into transition as quickly as possible. And what's the quickest way to get into transition? Often not even having to make an outlet pass. Like, when you don't even have to look for the guy, get a rebound, look for a guy to make an outlet pass, and then make the pass. When you don't have to do that action, you can just get the ball and you can go. That's great. One of the reasons the Thunder are good in transition is because Russell Westbrook gets a ton of defensive rebounds. He can get the ball and go. One of the reasons the Warriors are so good in transition is because they have guys who are legit rebounders who can bring the ball up the floor. Draymond Green is going to average double-digit rebounds, and he's going to bring the ball up the floor. Andre Iguodala is going to be a good rebounding wing. He's going to bring the ball up the floor. Steph Curry is actually an above-average rebounding point guard, and he's going to bring the ball up the floor. Like, that's one of the reasons the Warriors are so good in transition. They don't have to look at outlet passes. So I understand why Robertson said that. I guess it's possible that carries into the regular season. Maybe handles the ball a little bit more in transition. I wonder if that's going to hold up, if it's something that's just kind of, because teams always talk about running more in the preseason. And I think the Thunder will run more. It makes sense with this roster to run more. And they have a lot of guys who like to run and whose style it fits to run. Robertson likes to run and he's good at it. And Russell Westbrook likes to run and he's good at it. And Victor Oladipo likes to run and he's good at it. And these are guys who are really good in transition. And Steven Adams even is a good guy to have in transition because he's fast and he's athletic. And you can, you know, throw him on the lob when he's the trail man, or dump off to him and he can finish at the rim or whatever it is. Like, these are guys who are good in transition, good at finishing in the rim in transition. They're fast, they're sleek, they can get down the floor, and they're going to make other teams run. And it's a good way for the Thunder, even if they're not going to score straight on the fast break, it's a good way for the Thunder to force mismatches so that, you know, somebody who isn't actually a primary assignment has to pick up a guy in transition and it's not their guy, and all of a sudden the Thunder have a mismatch. You know, a big man has to pick up Russell Westbrook and all of a sudden Russ can go to work. Or a guard picks up, you know, Kanter, or a guard picks up Adams, and one of those guys can just go to work down low. You can exploit mismatches that way. It's a good way to compensate for the fact that the Thunder have a decent chance of being a below average half court offense this year. So I understand that they want to get out running, and one of the quicker ways to do that is by just telling Andre Roberson, when you get a rebound, and Roberson is a really good rebounding wing too. So when, you know, just say to him, when you get a rebound, just take it yourself. It's possible that happens. I wonder if it keeps up though. I wonder if it keeps up, because a lot of teams try to employ those strategies and then instincts kick in, or they pull back or whatever it is. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I'm really curious to see how it develops. Remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday, going to be doing that over-under preview, like I said, going to be on Friday, maybe Friday and Monday, we'll see, and that's with Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy Basketball. If you're subscribed to the show, you're going to be good on getting that one and every other podcast that I ever do. If you stay subscribed, remember, I need the listeners. I thrive off the listeners. It's all I do. It's why I wake up in the morning. It's why I go to bed at night. It's why I eat my lunch so happily. I need the listeners. You can head out to iTunes and subscribe to become one of those listeners. Just hit the subscribe button on Locked On Thunder. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ, and log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. And check out Thunder Road, which is my blog there, to follow team coverage and just see what's next for the Thunder. So that's going to do it for today. I'm back with you tomorrow, as always, for more Thunder and NBA talk. Until next time, though, Locked On Thunder is locking up.